Hey, Brian.
Hey, Elliot.
What's the talk of the table?
Today, we are sitting down with Super Dylan, a true multi-hyphenate in the TTRPG community. They are the new host of the long-running one-shot podcast, a game designer and a cast member on The Atomless, as well as a guest on shows like Unprepared Casters and RPG Geek's latest, Orbital Blues, Black Star. Dylan, welcome to the table.
Howdy.
Wait, Super Dylan of the One Shot Podcast and Atomless?
Yeah, it's Dylan from The Atomless. Hi.
What is this, a crossover episode?
This is a crossover episode.
Welcome. So good to have you.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
So, we wanted to talk to you, A, because we like talking to you, and B, because you recently took over the Legacy Podcast One Shot, which means you now have a hand in shaping the future of actual play and what games people are paying attention to. No pressure. But between One Shot and The Atomless, we sort of took a look at your AP career, and you've got this sort of mix now of old school, if we can say, the One Shot being around since 2013, and new school cutting edge with The Atomless. So when you take a look at the scope of your AP involvement, we'd love to ask, what's in common for you in what you get excited about participating in? Like, what are the hell yeses automatically for you?
Oh my God. Okay. All right. So yeah, I guess I have not considered that, but I do. I have gotten some involvement in like older running projects or projects that have been on the air for a long time, as well as newer things. And I think it's because I've been in this like weird liminal space where I started, you know, making content. Like I started making actual play and tabletop gaming related entertainment like a while back when it still felt like a really small pond, but with a lot of really big players in it. There wasn't a lot of what we're doing now with The Atomless and with Many Sided Media and like these channels and podcasts and stuff that are doing really cool and innovative and new stuff without a lot of like production power behind them or, you know, studio money behind them or anything like that. And so my goals have shifted and changed a lot to, you know, obviously, when you're kind of first starting out and you see these big dream, you know, larger than life tables like Critical Role and Dimension 20 and like, you know, a handful of other things, like the goal like seems right away that like, you know, like we can splash around in this little pond, but like that's like the dream is to make it to one of those spots somehow. But now my goals and my dreams have deeply shifted in that like all of the cool and weird and experimental and interesting things that all of my peers are doing are where I want to be and where I want to live up to. And that's the pool I want to be in. And I think that that's been really fun. Cause I mean, like doing things with you guys, like makes my heart skip beats and it makes me really excited and makes me really fulfilled artistically. So like I'm really excited by things like that and working with like the folks at RP Geeks, who I think also like just really value like telling new kinds of stories and finding new ways to explore actual play. And yeah, I really love that. And with One Shot in particular, I've just been really delighted by it. I think first, there are a million things I'm excited about with One Shot, but the one that I'm really most excited about is working with Tracy, the editor of One Shot. Tracy, when I first started coming on to do the show, Tracy was like, I want to do more interesting things with editing the show, and I want you to help me direction that. And so now, like, we get to have these little, you know, creative conversations where we talk about, you know, what kind of design is going to go into an episode. And I think that that's really fun and can be playful and experimental. And that's kind of my meandering answer.
It does feel like more and more
shows over the past, I mean, even just like year or two, are starting to, it feels like there's a bit of a shift going from like you said, hey, I want to be at one of these big tables, to being like, hey, why don't I just make a new big table, or like do our own big thing? And it,
yeah,
it does. And I mean, the thing we like to talk about in this show is like being really intentional with what you're doing. And it feels like more and more people are making that like investment of time and of energy and of resources into making whatever they are doing as cool and as big and as bold as they possibly can. And it's really cool to see more and more of that happening for low or no budgets.
I remember I was at, I went to my first Big Bad Con this past year. And, you know, a lot of that con is geared towards people being able to network with people you might not otherwise get the chance to network with. And I think, you know, from a game designer standpoint, it's unbeatable, like being in the same room with people who, you know, have these enormous legacies in game design is unmatched for sure. But when it came to like the actual play portion of it, like the people who blew my mind the most were people who were my peers in the room, like people that I sat and talked with about game design, like just chatting with like people from the Transplanar team, talking with Jeff Stormer, talking with James D'Amato. And like that was the part where I was like, I felt like my brain was expanding from all of the good, like innovative, creative energy, like being shared and expanded upon in that space.
It feels like if you're talking about the big fish in the pond that you used to focus on, it's like, we're not focused on how big the fish are anymore. We want to talk to the fish and get to know what these other fish that are the same size as me are thinking.
We're going to form a fish Voltron.
Yeah. And how can we make this fishbowl more interesting and weirder? And yeah, I really like that. I really loved meeting, you know, meeting Tatiana and talking about and listening to what they're doing with Soul Operator, which is just, you know, it's so new and interesting and weird. And I deeply love it. And I feel more inspired by that than by a lot of other things that, you know, that I've encountered in the past. Like, it's just really cool to see the interesting and new stuff that people are doing, and then to take that and see if you can even go further or take that inspiration and move it in a different direction. And that's just kind of how we all inspire each other.
Speaking of Soul Operator in particular, it is really exciting to see more people doing solo games and turning them into actual plays.
Yeah.
Like we tried this, what we did a season of Anamnesis by Samantha Lee, and we did Project Echo by Elliot. And it was really fun, really weird, really difficult. But it's fun to see it. Like, you end up creating much different stories than you would with most other games and actual plays in a really fun way. And it's exciting to see more and more people doing them.
I really like it because I personally really like solo games, both to play and as a designer. I love to make them. And I feel like they are elusive to a lot of people because the idea of them, the concept of them, seems a little intimidating or maybe even pointless. They're like, what, why am I gonna, you know, sit down and you know, journal or whatever for 2 hours? And I've done like, when I was doing Start Playing for a little while, and like my biggest request was for people that wanted me to like walk them through a solo game so that they like didn't feel intimidated by it. And I think like, obviously in actual play, we have more than just one goal. We're not just there to showcase the game. We're also creating like a narrative story, but like showing how the game can feel to play and how it might feel is definitely like an aspect of it. Even when we're doing these like highly narrative, you know, heavily edited actual plays, I think that still comes through. And to have an ecosystem where there are people playing solo games on these shows and giving people an opportunity to see how that actually turns out and to see, more importantly, like what it feels like to play one of those games and how exciting or sad or introspective it can be. I think that that is really cool. And I hope that it snowballs into more people getting curious about them and paying attention to them. And also, you know, it's just you kind of miss out on a little bit of that word of mouth with solo games when nobody's talking about them or playing them in like the public sphere. So I think that that's really good.
I will say, as of recording just yesterday, the solo game Astro Prisma finished their Kickstarter for it's a solo game. It's a spacefaring solo game that raised $400,000. And I was like, it was one of those things where I was like, what? Like, I thought people hated solo games, but no, it turns out they do not.
No, no, we're all freaks. We love
we're
it.
We're all freaks.
But, I do, I love to see that. It was surprising to me that just how big it got. Like, looking from stuff I knew it would be big. But like, I feel like that charts really well too, to like, you know, 2 weeks ago, Dimension 20 announced they were going to do a live show at Madison Square Garden. And it's like the top end of the scale keeps kind of going up in a lot of different areas of tabletop role-playing games in a way that kind of just like shifts everything up in a very
pond's getting bigger.
Exciting way. Yeah, the pond's
it
getting bigger.
It does. It gets bigger. And I think that sometimes it doesn't feel like it is because the pond is so much bigger. But like there are so many more opportunities to do like, I know I've heard people call it the ambitious middle, and I don't know how I feel about that, but like this like sort of like really high effort, you know, like really well-made games and actual play that don't necessarily have like millions of dollars to throw around, but can routinely make something really good and with like respect to the people working on it and, you know, respect to the games that they're playing. And I think that that's amazing and exciting to me.
Yeah.
There's a lot sort of cool stuff out there.
I sort of feel like it's like the ambitious underpaid. It feels right.
Yeah. The ambitious underpaid. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sorry, wait. You're getting paid for this?
Yeah.
So I feel like relevant to what you just said about, you know, making things that respect the games you're playing. I feel like as a former fan of One Shot, like when I first started getting into indie games, it was a lot of the way that like I would go test out an indie game by listening to it. I feel like that's sort of part and parcel with the goals of that show. And I know that like you said, you're paying attention to your peers and like what they're making, what's interesting. How do you hope to kind of like spotlight these folks on One Shot, like the kinds of game design you think are interesting? Like, is there a solo One Shot episode like in your future, like something that's probably never been done?
Well, it has been done.
Oh, it has been done. Okay.
James's last tenure on One Shot was a solo Starcrossed. That actually is really beautiful. And that's the last run that he did, which I think is really nice that's kind of how it played out before I came on. And I think I certainly will do a solo eventually on One Shot. My goal, though, for now is in order to, just like you said, to put respect to the games that we're playing and to make sure that we're showcasing them in a way that is both entertaining as a show, but also really beneficial to like the ecosystem in general, is that I'm really trying to avoid at all cost scenarios where I am just throwing like anybody together to play any game. And like, I really want to put a lot of intention into why this cast of people playing this game specifically. You know, Orbital Blues is a game that I learned about first from listening to your show Using Orbital Blues. And then shortly after hearing about it from that, I did an actual play over with RP Geeks, which is airing now, but I had recorded it like just after I finished listening to your Orbital Blues season. And And that was with Drac, but also this whole new crew, including Ed Spence, who I had just played with for the first time. And so I wanted to bring some of those people together to like mash that cast up a little bit, get some crossover, get some people in actual play who haven't played before to play together, because we've got like, we know that these people do emotional honesty very well and can play a game like Orbital Blues in a fun and entertaining way. And to also, I think, as a challenge to myself to like be able to put a game on the show and maintain the fact that the show is very lighthearted and has a silly bent, but also is known to dip into, you know, emotional honesty and deeper emotional connections and things like that as well. So this is definitely the first game I've had on that has a serious lean to it. And I'm really excited for that. I have plans to bring on some people who are very notable for playing Vampire the Masquerade, but I'm going to make them play a different indie vampire game that is weird and maybe a little unnerving. And I want to see how that goes. So like, these are the kinds of things I'm trying to put together where no cast is unintentional and no game is unintentional. They both are matched to each other so that hopefully the players are highlighting the game and the game is highlighting these performers as well.
I love that. And as far as your, because you said you were really excited to work with Tracy as an editor, and Tracy was excited to work with you and like revamp the show. And in terms of like editing and heightening the show through post-production, what are your goals for the show in that regard going forward?
Honestly, it's nothing terribly too groundbreaking in that respect, just new for this show in particular, to add a little bit more soundscaping, a little bit more, you know, silly sound effects, doing things like having themes for different characters, or like for, we just did a series of scene thieves. And so what we did for that was we had different music to cue when we were inside the play versus when we were inside the heist. And that way, you know, in addition to hearing us, you know, using different character voices or whatever, you have like a different scene being set via the music and the sound effects that indicate where we are. We're also playing with and toying with a little tiny meta narrative about the One Shot Network studio and the cast of characters that live and operate within it. We have a toad that attends the washroom. and there's a murder gladiator stadium as well. You know, like there's things brewing in that arena.
No pun intended.
In addition to the game itself.
I feel like, and I'm wondering actually if this is on your mind at all, but it feels like in some ways you're, and this is not to disparage One Shot as it was in any way, but you're sort of bringing the show up a little bit to what audiences are expecting more from their shows. Like, is that a consideration at all? Like, this is like more of people's expectation these days of some of these like extra production touches, or are you just chasing like what's most artistically interesting?
I wouldn't have pushed for that necessarily. I think that One Shot has been doing what it does very, very well for a long time. But I think that the opportunity there was not necessarily to meet others' expectations, but because Tracy told me that it would be more fun for them to like, and I feel like if you have, and it's more fun for me too, to like have that creative back and forth with the other person who is, you know, who is making this show with me. Like, obviously, when I'm playing the game, I have whoever I've invited on. But at the end of the day, like the show is my responsibility. But Tracy is the other, you know, the other arm in that. And so the fact that we get to collaborate, the fact that we get to work together makes it more fun for both of us. And that, I think, like, if your editor is having a bad time editing the show, I can't imagine that it's coming out as good as it could be. Like, if they're, rather than if they're having fun and feeling like they can play. So like, I don't know, I just don't see any downside.
It works pretty well for us to, you know, be mean to Brian and make him have a bad time. He puts out pretty good stuff, the meaner you
are
to him.
I've had a very bad time editing some very good stuff.
Yeah. You just look, you got a face that you got a face to be mean to, Brian. You just look so sweet.
They want to see if they can break it.
Yeah.
They
can't. Yeah.
Your optimism scares me and I want to hurt it.
I don't like it.
I really love the ways that you talk about collaboration and approach collaboration broadly. And it feels like that word feels very top of like all of these different things you do. Like part of me wants to ask you, I'm rethinking a question live because I want to ask you like, how does your work as a game designer inform One Shot? But like, I almost think that you're not approaching these things differently, like through the different lenses. Like you just have this really collaborative spirit, but maybe there is an answer there. I'm just kind of rethinking live where the direction.
I see your vision. I see the roads you're looking down. So I think it's really interesting because like when I'm not like, it's like, yes, hi, I'm Dylan. I'm a game designer and actual play performer and whatever. But those things are like, they're enmeshed, like so intertwined in a way that they cannot be pulled apart in any way. And I feel like what I am doing on any show is a little bit of game design as well. Like in the most abstract kind of ways, like when I'm even like editing the Atomless or like planning shows for the Atomless, we're using a pre-existing game, Starfinder, you know, for the main campaign, sure. But how we're using it, how we're changing it, reasons why we drop certain things and cut certain things, reasons why certain mechanics don't get used and why certain lore has been changed, like all of that is a little bit of game design. All of the ways that we decide to improvise together, the ways we've learned as a group, we improvise well. Like if you listen to an episode we recorded, you know, 3 weeks ago versus the one we recorded 2 years ago, very different approaches to things that we're all using as a cast because we've learned each other's styles and we've learned how to work well. And is that just a natural part of performing? Yeah, but is it also a little intentional? And have we brought some, you know, design to it? I think that's all true at the same time. And I think that we're all doing it in collaboration with each other at all times constantly. So yeah, I can't really pull those things apart. And they all are aspects of how much I love to do this all together. Like, all of it, like, and I'm just, and just even like how much I love, like my goal this year, and I've crushed it, by the way, my goal this year has been to listen to at least as much actual play as I'm creating, and I'm killing it in doing so. I'm like 1,000% like more creative. Like my energy to create is like amplified and inspired, like cranked up double than what it was last year when I was just in my own bubble creating with my people and not really like consuming a lot of what was going on beyond maybe the occasional one shot or like dipping into the occasional show here and there. But like actively consuming what my peers are making has improved my creativity and general quality of life. Not so much like my sleep schedule or anything, but like the other stuff good.
It has been a thing that for the past couple of years, I have definitely listened to less and less actual play because we've been making more and more actual play.
Yeah.
And so I'm just like, you know, you finish you get home from work and you're like, I don't want to do any more work. But you know, over the past couple of weeks, we've been doing the screenings in the Many Sided Media Discord of we did Beyond the Brook. Oh man. Oh, I love Beyond the Brook.
I've watched Beyond the Brook three times. Beyond the Brook times.
Is so good. I'm still the littlest bit mad at Drac about it, because Elliot and I were having a conversation a year and a half ago, being like, oh, maybe we should do like an Over the Guard Wall inspired thing. Oh, Babes in the Woods would be good. And like the next day Drac announces, we're like, God damn it. Well, okay, we'll shelf that one.
Yeah. We pretty much were just like, well, Drac's gonna kill it, so we might as well not.
Yeah, we won't come.
Yeah. That whole team, that they really crushed it entirely. It's kind of sick.
But listening to, like you said, just like listening to a little bit more of what my peers are making and what other people are doing, and just like the little changes in style that, you know, Ed Spence has versus, you know, J and B from Planet Arcana or anything else I'm listening to, I can already see it anytime I'm playing, of like, oh, that was kind of an Ed Spence move. Like, oh, that was kind of a Jay Stroutman move.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we just saw and talked to Bridget Jeffries at BreakoutCon.
Oh, this is a great example. Yeah.
We just saw Bridget Jeffries from Chaosium perform a live show at BreakoutCon. And then we had her on the show because we left that live show just being like, we were so excited about the way you GM'd, and like we left in there, we were like, there are three things like I want to take away from the way you GM'd. Like,
there were things I used the next day in like games I was running at BreakoutCon.
It's the best.
Of like, that was such a good move. I'm going to steal that move whole cloth.
Outside of game design, I am just an amalgam of every best friend I've ever had. Like, there's no, you strip all of that away, like, I don't even know what person is left behind. And that's also what is happening here in both game design. I mean, like, my game design is a little bit Vidya Valetti, a little bit Megan Cross, a little bit, you know, like there's nothing that if you pull all of those people away from my lived experience, my games don't exist. And same goes for GMing or making actual play and everything else.
Rom-Com Drama Bomb is a three-player, GM-less, asymmetrical TTRPG about meet-cutes and mayhem. In this 90-minute timed game, you'll play as two people who shouldn't fall in love and the evil villain who will stop at nothing to make sure they do. Rom-Com Drama Bomb is now available. You can grab it digitally at moreblueberries.itch.io/romcom. Or you can grab a physical book, the pinkest book you've ever seen, at moreblueberries.shop/romcom. Check it out and happy rom-comming. Rom-comming? I don't know. Drama bombing?
Speak into the void. You never know who may be listening. In the Annie Award-winning Void 1680 AM, you take on the role of a late-night radio DJ. Use a standard poker deck and a six-sided die to build your playlist, interact with callers, and assemble a show that expresses something about why you love the music that you do. Void 1680 AM includes rules for single session and ongoing play, so you can develop the relationships of your DJ with your callers over time. You can even join the growing community of affiliate DJs whose shows are broadcast live on air and on YouTube. Shop Void 1680 AM now at bannerless.games/shop and take 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON. Again, that's 20% off your order with promo code DUNGEON.
I had a fear that years ago that I still have, but like it's slowly going away, that because I could see all of the patchwork pieces of me, like I could trace them back to their source, I was like, oh, there's not an original person here. There's this is a little bit this person, this little bit this person. I get this laugh from my dad. I get this joke from my friend. I get, you know. But the more I intentionally add new patches to the patchwork, it does feel more like I am choosing to sculpt this thing out of pieces of other people.
Exactly. Absolutely. You are the most beautiful full passport in the world. That's so amazing. I love to be I love to be created by the people around me. And like, that's also the kinds of stories that we're telling. Like, you know, even if you like to kind of bring this back to what we were talking about earlier, like when we're playing for an actual play or privately, you're playing a game with your friends and you're crafting a narrative together, you know, the story changes based on who's at the table that day and what kind of mood they're in and what, you know, what media resonates with them and what's happened to them in their lives. And it all changes everything. But then even playing a solo game, you know, the writer has left little footprints and little influences in there that can't be avoided. And like, you're still not creating this in a vacuum. You're still not making a story in a vacuum. You're still going to be affected by what other people put onto you that day and what the world has impacted you with that day. And so these kinds of stories that we're building and these games that we're playing and these games we're designing, they're never made in a vacuum. They're made by our whole collective collaborative life experience. And I love that.
And it's fun that in actual play, you sort of get to watch those patchwork pieces come together while you're doing the thing, which you don't always get to do in art forms. Like every art form has that influence. But you get to watch it happen at the table in actual play.
Yeah. You're the audience and the writer's room at the same time. Yeah, that's rad as hell.
I really like that you've been spending so much time trying to match how much actual play you're watching versus how much actual play you're creating. I think I should absolutely be doing the same. And also, the thing that I should be doing is playing any game not on mic. Truly, any yes. game not on yeah. mic I should be doing and don't.
I'm really spoiled for that because I am local to and friends with Vidya Valetti. And you go out to like, you'll just be like, do you want to grab coffee? And Vidya Valetti will show up with a backpack full of games. And there is no way, you don't have to ask. They will be making you play games, and it's the best.
I had the joy of playing with them in person recently with Rowan off mic, and it was a delight, an absolute delight.
I heard, and I'm mad and jealous that I was not invited to that, and I'm putting that on the air.
Yeah, when we hung out the like a week before, I think me and Viditya were chatting about game design, and you stopped us and you were like, hey, love you both, you're not allowed to become better friends than we are.
Yeah, that's the rule. I love this. I hope this friendship thrives.
Not too much. Don't
not make, too much, though.
Don't get too close.
Not too much.
I will prune these branches.
Yeah.
You guys were playtesting some rom-com drama bomb, I believe.
Yes, we were. We were playtesting rom-com drama bomb.
And rom-com drama bomb.
My favorite game.
Super Dylan. What is this, a crossover episode?
What that is this, was a crossover episode?
That sure. was a crossover episode.
Oh, I want to do rom-com drama bomb on one shot, and the like manic cycle in my brain trying to figure out what the perfect trio is actually the biggest problem I'm having, because there are too many people that I want and I only get one.
Oh, there's some great trios. Many great possible trios.
I have like some dreams, some of the biggest dreams in the world. My biggest one is not going to happen. But I did send the email anyway. And since it's not going to happen, I'm going to say it now. But I emailed this because my dream rom-com drama bomb episode of One Shot is Karen Gillan and her husband, which is the guy from The Eagles Are Turning People Into Horses.
Oh, I know his comedian partner.
Yeah. I love them as a team both very, very much. But I think that would be so funny.
That's
so we'll
hilarious.
See.
Them as the leads.
That would be good.
Yeah.
Yeah. As the leads, and then yeah, and then I as
super
the villain,
the super villain.
Also, I just got to say that you brought up The Eagles Are Turning People Into Horses. The Eagles are turning people into horses is the pound for pound funniest thing that's ever been created.
It's, I quote it to this day. And
I haven't seen this.
It's criminal that no one knows.
I'm putting the Eagles are turning people into horses in the show notes.
You gotta. It is seminal. It's wild. I mean, like,
it's the best thing that's ever been made.
Just like,
Abby just shouted from the background, it's the best thing that's ever been made.
It's ridiculous. It's so funny. And it's so long. It is 20 minutes long.
And it should
and
be longer.
It is. it could be a full length feature film. But yeah, so that's my dream, and I'll come back on the show if I achieve it to let you know. But yeah, that's I love that game. It's such a silly game, and this is one of the things I love about game design. Is that Rom-Com Drama Bomb is the stupidest thing I've ever heard of, and it's fucking brilliant, and it's the most elegantly crafted game I've ever played. It's so smooth and so well designed, and it's just like Rom-Com Drama Bomb has the same energy as when you get like the most beautiful philosophical advice on loss and grief from like Tumblr user 69 blowjob. Like, that's exactly what Rom-Com Drama Bomb is. It's so elegant and beautiful and like a pristine example of game design, and it is so ridiculous, and I love you for making it and for inflicting it on me, and I'll love it forever. That's all.
Wow. I don't think a kinder thing has ever been said about one of my games. That is great. That is perfect. That's going on the box, dude. Like a philosophical statement from Blowjob for 2069.
Yeah, exactly.
That's really funny.
I feel like right after playing with you in Rom-Com Drama Bomb, which Freddie Prinze Jr., I think the opening monologue of Freddie Prinze Jr. is one of my favorite things that has ever been on our podcast. but going from that and like immediately, what were you going to say?
I was just going to say that first line where it's like, and I know that's not strictly your problem. Or no, I know that's not strictly everybody's problem, but it is yours.
But it is yours now. But going from that and like very quickly in after that, watching you on as Petar and Unprepared Casters, and then just a couple of days ago on I love Petar with all my heart, and watching you as Wyla on Orbital Blues Black Star, I'm curious, when you get asked to do shows, what makes you excited about coming into a thing, and like what are the things that excite you about like playing in different games?
God, you know, sometimes I don't know until I'm sat there. Like I've tried really hard to change this. And I have successfully done a lot of change in this over the last year and a half or 2 years. Because like this, you know, like we were talking about this, like pond is growing, but it's still very small. And there's like not... there's simultaneously like a lot of opportunities, but like not all of them are great. And like a lot of it is just sort of like people just trying to do whatever. And I don't disparage that at all. I think that that's how I started, and just taking whatever anybody asked me to do and just like running with it. And so I've done a lot of stuff that like was just... like as soon as I left the chair, like I forgot everything that happened, and it was just not like there was no, you know, like there was not a lot of care, you know, put into it. Cause it was just, you know, like, hey, we're just going to get on stream and goof off and do whatever together. And that's fine. But I don't have like all that expendable energy now. And I'm really trying to make sure that everything I do is something that I feel good about and that I like want to go back to and like want to revisit and want to celebrate. Like that's really important to me, is that I'm not making these things for nothing or like for no, you know, reason. Like I at the very least have to feel proud of it and good about it. And like my first time on Unprepared Casters was like lightning in a bottle. It was like, it's one of the best things I've ever done. Arc 11 is so special in every way. But like when I sat down to do it, like I didn't really know Unprepared Casters that well. I knew Haley and Gus a little bit, but I didn't know like the whole show. I didn't know like what their style was or anything. And I think like I just brought, like we all just brought so much intention to it and like elevated each other. And we just wound up having this great electric show. And so when I came back to Unprepared Casters, like I knew that it was going to be special because I knew that like we've done that together already. And this time I knew all of the performers well and, you know, and then, but then what I'm looking for when I sit down is I just want to know that the show that we're making is being made with some kind of intention. And like that is not going to necessarily stop me from showing up to a ridiculous charity stream where the, you know, goal is just to, you know, be as ridiculous as possible for 2 hours so that we could raise money for something or whatever. But other than that, outside of that, like I really want to sit down and play and make a show with people who have some sort of intention behind it. And whether that intention is to like be a tutorial for this game and how to play it, or to be like incredibly narratively experimental and avant-garde and abstract. Like it doesn't really matter as long as I know what the goal is and can help contribute to it. And then that's, yeah, I guess that's really all I need is to know that there's a purpose behind what we're doing.
It does just help give you a target with which to aim at.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. Oh, we're all trying to do this. Great. I can at least be walking in the same direction as everybody. Like,
yeah, exactly.
That's definitely become our big North Star too. I feel like we talk about like intention all the time. It's just like, it's what makes us most excited to work with someone when it's like, here's exactly what I'm working towards. And like, it doesn't matter. I think resources, you know, like if you don't have to have all the resources in the world to have like a really interesting, cool intention and put the effort into it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think like speaking of intention and something that very clearly had intention that I got to experience, which was a great, great joy at Breakout, was the Atomless's first ever live show.
God, our first live show. Crazy.
So delightful. And you guys did this incredible audience participation that was diegetic to the world. And like, oh, it was so fun. As an audience member, I felt so part of the story. And I just kind of want to throw out like what was that experience like for you? And like, what was it like to play with like such an active audience participation?
That was wild. We were nervous about a couple of things because, you know, we're used to recording the Atomless for like 3 to 4 hours at a time. We had, I think, 90 minutes or something like that. So it was like a short amount of time within to do the show. And the fear with like Robin baking, you know, audience participation into it is that, okay, we're still going to record this. And so if nobody shows up, we're still going to play and record a game and whatever. If nobody shows up and we've baked audience participation into this, it's going to get real sad in here. It's going to get real bad. But it wound up being perfect. It wound up being like the best energy, energy that we could not have predicted. We did a little sit down because we always do before any recording and we talk about like our goals and like what we want to happen, et cetera. And so we all had some idea of what was going to happen, but the audience having like a character arc was not something that was planned. Like the audience literally growing and changing as people definitely not on the on the pre-show checklist. And that was just like, that's one of those things that's just the magic of improv and improvising a story, is that like sometimes something extra good happens that you didn't plan for, and you just get to be there and be a part of the magic of that. So yeah, the audience just happened to be so killer.
Yeah, yeah.
That,
but I think that's intention being rewarded. I would throw out, not, it's not all luck. I think it's intention. You know,
You know what? I will eat my hat. Thank you. I do agree with you. That's great. But it was a great audience too. But also, I do agree. We did put some good energy out there, and like, you know, having. The intention was obviously like for it to be like, because we're pretty high level in Starfinder now. And so to have this like one big bad fighting us under normal circumstances is, you know, generally pretty easy. So like having like this concept of the whole audience being against us and being like on the villain side added a lot of extra drama and stuff in the beginning. But then all of a sudden you've got this journey that they're going on, and I don't know, it was just beautiful and wonderful, and it's also just like it's wild to have like feedback, that like real-time feedback of people laughing or like groaning or what, like I haven't done live theater in since, you know, I don't know, before I could legally drink, so so like I haven't really had that in a long time. And I forgot that it's like pretty, it's drugs a little bit. It's really good feeling. So yeah, I loved the hell out of that.
I think you get this a little bit when you're running a game at a table, but when you have an audience in front of you, especially one that is not participating, you know immediately when something does or doesn't work, and you get better so much faster because it's so much scarier. There is nothing quite as sharp as the sound of an audience not laughing at a joke.
Oh yeah.
It's deep, deep in a primal fear.
Yeah. I don't like it.
But then one chuckle at one little doodad. That's drugs, baby.
So good.
And that's drugs.
That is.
So Dylan, we've talked about what you've done, what you're doing. What is next? Like, what is the stuff that you're hoping to get into in the next 6 months, year, 2 years, 5 years, 100 years?
1,000 years.
100 years. When I'm on ice and
still playing games.
And still playing games with the other heads in the room. I think what I'm most excited about is everything that we're doing with the Atomless and with Patrick Productions. Robin and I, the way that we have discovered, because the Atomless started as kind of any actual play does, you know, we didn't do anything very experimental with it in the beginning. And then as it has grown and as we've gotten more into it, we've found our style. And now that we have, we want to do more with that and we want to push it even more. And so we have plans, things, some things that have been recorded, some things that are just thoughts on paper so far. But I really just want to be deeply weird about it. And I want to start making some podcasts and some actual play that maybe will flop because maybe it's too weird. And like, I just want to, not that I want anything to fail, but I just want to feel free to make stuff that is different and outside of my comfort zone and outside of a box of things that I know will do well, and just start trying and experimenting with things and just telling like the stories that I want to tell because we can. So yeah, I guess you can look forward to some weird avant-garde silly concept actual play podcast coming from Patrick Productions.
I'm very excited for that. I love things that are aiming to maybe flop.
Maybe flop. Maybe no
Sometimes
one listens
the
to
best
it.
Stuff.
Maybe some guy in a basement in the middle of Idaho is the only person who listens.
We've put out some stuff where I'm like, I don't know, this might flop. Let's see. Let's find out.
So, Dylan.
Yes.
Our closing question for all of our guests is, what are you bringing to the table? And this is just our cute way of asking for a recommendation for our listeners. This could be a person, a game, a show, a resource. It could be within tabletop. It could be outside of tabletop if you want. But something you want to share with the Talk of the Table listener today.
Yes.
The one. The guy in Idaho.
Yes, that one guy. Okay. So, what I want to put you on to is not really actual play at all, but there are some familiar people to the actual play scene that were involved in this. And it is the Pixelated Players proudly presents Romeo and Juliet. It is one of the coolest and weirdest things I've ever tuned into. It was a Twitch stream live theatrical production of Romeo and Juliet. The full show, and it was okay. I don't want to undersell how cool this was. One, the actors and performers were all had, you know, background, if not like doing theater professionally experience. Like, they were all very good as performers. But the way they did the Twitch stream itself was very interesting, utilizing like camera placement that was being moved around as the characters, like, because you're just like people remote in boxes, like, they did a lot of experimental and weird things to make this look like a stage production, but without trying to mimic it so much that it became like silly or goofy. Like, they did interesting things, and the use of music and the use of like emotes on the screen, the use of backdrops, the use of the Twitch chat itself was all like incorporated into this play. And it's still 100% Romeo and Juliet, but it is absolutely like an experimental new way of putting on a play in a digital format with not just a remote audience, but with remote players. And I think that that is so cool. It is the Pixelated Players. It originally aired on Meadows Twitch stream, but I don't think it's there anymore. So you have to go to pixelatedplayers.com to see the final show. And they did 3 nights of it, and they were all run live. So they didn't just like record and air it 3 times. It was given the full live theater treatment. And yeah, I just want to see more interesting stuff like that from the world. So I hope you go find it, seek them out, and I hope Pixelated Players does more cool stuff like that.
Amazing. That's very cool.
I'm really interested in that.
We'll put the link in the show notes, as always. Dylan, thank you so much for coming to the table. Great having you here. Do you want to let people know where they can find you online if they're looking for you?
Yeah, if you're looking for me, you can find me at Super Dylan anywhere on social media. That's SuperDillin. And you can find me on The Atomless or on One Shot, where I'm playing games all the time.
And if you want more gamey content from us, please check out the 20-sided newsletter and the many-sided media Discord. Those are both linked in the show notes. Please rate, review, and follow Talk of the Table wherever you get your podcasts. And that's what the table is talking about. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.